हरिः ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Jai. So now the troops are getting ready to move into position. Vyasadeva has visited Dhritarashtra, who is still, you know, explaining to him, you know, it's still at a moment when they could call off the war. You know, everybody's are being arranged, but he could send a quick messenger and, you know, stop before things get too bad. But they could see his, Dhritarashtra is only just hoping that somehow or another everything will work out, despite his doing everything wrong. Vyasadeva could understand there was nothing more he could do to help the Kurus. He stood up. O king, I am leaving. Is there any last thing you desire to hear from me? Yes, there is one thing. What signs portend victory for an army? The king still hoped that somehow his sons might emerge victorious. He wanted to know if there were any indications of it. After all, the Kaurava forces were almost twice the Pandavas. Vyasadeva told him which omens indicate victory. Understanding Dhritarashtra's mind, he said, the size of an army is of little consequence. Indeed, a large army that is broken and routed is difficult to regroup. More important is the courage and camaraderie of the soldiers. Even 50 well-trained men who do not retreat and who know each other well can defeat an entire army. Victory in any battle is always uncertain. Therefore, it is always superior to negotiate for peace. The result attained by negotiation is best. That obtained by disunion is indifferent. And that obtained by war is the worst. Even the victors suffer heavy losses. The Rishi then took his leave, the sound of his wooden sandals on the marble floor echoing through the chamber. Dhritarashtra sighed repeatedly as Sanjaya began to describe what was happening at Kurukshetra. Because Sanjaya, Dhritarashtra said he would give, Vyasadeva said he'd give Dhritarashtra the eyes to be able to see. But he said he didn't want, because then he'll see, you know, everybody dying. So then Vyasadeva gave that vision to Sanjaya, who was his disciple, and so then he can see what's happening. Even though they're sitting in the chambers, by Vyasadeva's grace, then within his heart he can see everything that's going on in the battlefield. On the battlefield, Yudhishthira spoke with Arjuna. In comparison to the enemy, our troops are but few. In such cases, Brihaspati has recommended the needle formation. Quickly arrange our forces in this way, O Dhananjaya, or in any other way you see fit. So he's pointing out, according to Brihaspati, this is the best. So arrange like that unless you know of some other better way to do it. Arjuna stood before his brother, clothed from head to foot in impenetrable armor. In his hands he held the Gandiva, which gave off an iridescent glow. Nearby stood his fire-colored chariot, with Krishna holding the reins of his pure white horses. He looked at Yudhishthira, who shone in his own brilliant armor and jeweled helmet. I will arrange your forces in the unassailable Vajra formation, which Indra designed. I will station Bhima at the head. Simply upon seeing him, the enemy will flee, like so many terrified animals seeing a lion. There's no man who can even cast his eye on Brihadar when he is enraged. He will be our shelter, as Indra is the shelter of the celestials. So needle means it's a long, thin one, because in that you go in. But as you go in, then you can fight as they go. And then if, because you don't have many forces, everybody's fighting right there. So as your men keep coming, you still have people to fight. Well, if you do something long, they can kill all your people at once. But this way, then, you know. But then the Vajra will be a similar thing, but it's got zigzags. So that means it will come in and then hit this side, then it'll hit that side, then this side, that side. It's a similar kind of thing, but it has a little bit wider. So he says, Indra, he came up with this. And then when you put Bhima in the front, everyone would be terrified. Arjuna mounted his chariot and set out to make the arrangement. The leading chariot divisions moved quickly forward and formed themselves into a long point, with Bhima, Drishtadyumna, Nakula, Sahadeva, and Drishtaketu at its head. Hundreds of thousands of soldiers wielding swords, spears, and axes accompanied those generals, flanked by great elephants clad in steel armor. The army thundered forward. Behind the point, they opened out into a larger group filled with horsemen and infantry. Virat and his entire Akshauhini of troops protected the formation in the rear. Right, so then you have, you know, some way that then what you put where, then that's also what's first, what's second, like this. Nakula and Sahadev guarded Bhima's left and right sides, while Abhimanyu and Draupadi's sons protected him from behind. Not far behind them came Shikhandi, protected by Arjuna and advancing with firm determination to kill Bhishma. Yudhishthira took up his position in the center of the army. Because if the king's killed the army, the war is over. So that's why, even though he's out leading, he's there, but at the same time he has to be protected. Many chariot fighters protected him all around, and he appeared like the sun surrounded by bright planets. The warrior's standards rose up above the troops like palm trees decorated with gold and silver. Above them all was Arjuna's huge banner with Hanuman at its top, shouting out his fearful battle cry. As the army advanced, Bhima whirled his mace and roared. He seemed to scorch the Kauravas by his glance. Even his own troops were afraid of him. Right, so you can imagine, they know he's on their side, so he's not going to injure them, but they're still afraid. He looks so fierce, so let alone the other side. Right, because here it's just by seeing him. So Duryodhana, because of his envy, he'll always think he's nothing. But that's not actually the way it is. Once the Pandava forces were arrayed, they stopped to await orders. The two commanders had yet to blow their conches before the fighting could begin. The Pandavas looked towards the eastern side of the battlefield, where the immense Kaurava army spread out across the entire horizon as far as the eyes could see. A strong wind began to blow, carrying sharp stones and pebbles, and the sky thundered, and although no clouds were visible, meteors fell and the earth trembled. A thick cloud of dust rose and obscured the sun. So, right, so you can understand, these are all inauspicious omens. Who they're for, that's another point. But the point is that they're there, so you know it's not going to work out good for somebody here. Seeing the Pandavas' Vajra formation, Bhishma arrayed the Kaurava troops in a counter formation. With his white headdress, white banner, white bow, and white umbrella over his head, he looked like a white mountain. Duryodhana rode in the midst of the army, riding an elephant the color of a blue lotus. Above his seat, a large white umbrella sheltered him. His great mace rested on his shoulder, and his bow was by his side. He was eulogized by bards and singers, and was protected by hundreds of thousands of troops. All of Dhritarashtra's sons were in the division under Bhishma's command and personal protection, right? Because they're worried that Bhima is going to kill them all, right? So, countless kings and princes from every part of the globe, surrounded by the armies, advanced towards the Pandavas. When it says all parts of the globe, that means literally all parts of the globe, because at that time, the whole planet would have been Bharatvarsha. So when you said the emperor was the lord of seven land, you know, continents and seven seas, it's the same seven continents and seven seas as now. So they were coming from everywhere like that. So of course you're going to have, you know, great fighters and all that from all over. And so then when this battle happens, basically you're destroying the whole administrative class of the whole planet. That's why the Pandavas were trying to avoid the battle, and Duryodhana couldn't care less, as long as he's emperor. But then he'll be emperor of what? Behind all the troops came Drona, riding on a golden chariot, yoked with red horses. Gazing across at the Kaurava army with Bhishma at their head, Yudhishthira again became apprehensive. He turned to Arjuna. O mighty armed hero, it seems to me that Bhishma has arranged his troops in an impenetrable formation. Nor do I see any possibility of overpowering the grandfather. He has limitless strength and unfading glory. Who can approach him in battle? How can victory be ours? Yudhishthira appeared disconsolate and dejected. Arjuna offered words of encouragement. Listen, O king, as I tell you how only a few men can overpower a vast army. Brihaspati explained that in days of yore, when the celestials fought the demons, those who desire victory do not conquer by prowess, but by truth, compassion, piety, and virtue. Because your good qualities, that's what's going to make everything work out. Fight with assurance, dear brother, for victory is always where righteousness is found. Yudhishthir still seemed doubtful. Was his cause even righteous? It seemed to him that his desire for a kingdom was at the root of this war. Like Yudhishthir's thinking that his desire for a kingdom is at the root of the war. No, it's not. He's a Kshatriya. They're supposed to do Kshatriya duties. It means Krishna says in the Gita, everyone should perform their duties. You know, so him doing Kshatriya activities, and they ask simply just for 5 villages. The problem is Duryodhana is the root cause of this war because he wants everything with the Pandavas having nothing, simply out of envy, not that it's an advantage. The advantage would be he's the king and Yudhishthir and his brothers are assisting as Kshatriyas in their own area. They have their kingdom and they're family members, and so between all of them they control the whole planet very comfortably. That's the proper thing, and everybody, there isn't one person except for, of course, Shakuni and Karna and Dushasana who say otherwise, but everybody else says, no, this is what you should do. Krishna says, we saw Vyasadeva says, all the other sages say, all the other great kings say, you know, even his own Bhishma Dev, everybody says. But Duryodhana won't go. But Yudhishthira, because he's pious, he thinks that, you know, there's something he could do about it. But it's actually, no, it's Duryodhana's here is the one who's completely at fault. Arjuna, assessing his misgivings, continued, we have Krishna on our side. He is righteousness and truth personified. Narad said that victory is certain to go to Krishna and whoever is on his side. Indeed, it is one of the Lord's eternal attributes. His might is infinite. He is the original person beyond and above this mundane world with all its politics and suffering. I do not see the cause for your sorrow when the Lord of the Celestials is on your side wishing you success. So Krishna is not going to pick a side that's wrong. He's doing this because, you know, he comes to establish Dharma and destroy Adharma. Duryodhana is Adharma personified and Yudhishthira is Dharma personified. So he says it's beyond politics and all this. So, like that. Thinking of Krishna, Yudhishthira felt pacified. He looked at his troops. It is exactly as you say, Arjuna. Krishna desires this conflict, and thus we should not hesitate. Tell our men to fight to the best of their power, with fairness and with a desire to attain heaven. Yudhishthira then distributed charity to the numerous Brahmins who had accompanied him onto the battlefield. He was surrounded by rishis who walked with him, walked around him chanting hymns in his praise and invoking auspiciousness for the battle. Having been given gold, cows, fruits, flowers, and silken cloth, they left the field uttering prayers and Vedic mantras. So you notice that Yudhishthira is surrounded by Brahmins, and then he gives charity and everything to there. They come onto the battlefield, he gives charity, then they go back satisfied and giving their blessings. While Duryodhana, he's on the battlefield, he's surrounded just by warriors. He's not so pious like that. Yudhishthira has all the warriors there, but the Brahmins also can. Arjuna's chariot moved to the front of the army. Krishna said, there stands that mighty hero among men, Bhishma, who has performed hundreds of sacrifices, who scorches his foes in battle, and who will soon attack our troops like a lion. Innumerable troops protect him as clouds cover the sun. Make him your target, Arjuna, for no one else can face him. Krishna told Arjuna to offer a prayer to the goddess Durga so that she would empower him. Arjuna alighted from his chariot and knelt down with folded palms. With his face to the east, he chanted hymns from the Vedas to supplicate the powerful goddess of the material energy, because she's in control of the material energy. And when the demigods, you see, in many instances when they're having a fight with the demons and they can't actually overpower them, then they make an arrangement that she comes and she fights, because if she fights, no one defeats. Of course, Narayan and Shiva, and that's another thing that we're just talking about. This is the general. As he prayed, the goddess appeared above him in the sky. O son of Pandu, you will surely attain victory. You have the invincible Narayana to help you, because it's Narayan Rishi. No foe can defeat you, not even the almighty Indra. Durga vanished and Arjuna rose to his feet. Considering himself blessed, he remounted his chariot with a joyful heart. Seeing that both armies were in position and waiting for the battle to begin, Bhishma raised his conch and sounded a great blast. At once, the sounds of hundreds of other conch shells reverberated around the battlefield, as all the leading warriors joined with him. Drums, bugles, trumpets, and horns all suddenly sounded, creating a tumult. Arjuna and Krishna took out their conches. They blew long and mighty blasts that resounded across the battlefield. Bhima, the twins, and all the other leading Pandava fighters also sounded their conch shells. Hearing that celestial sound, the Kauravas felt their hearts quake. But Bhishma was cheered. His eyes flooded with tears as he recognized the sound of Krishna's transcendental conch, right? Because the Kauravas sounded their conch shells, but it's very, very, powerful and loud, because there's just so much volume and all that, and they're great warriors. But when Krishna and Arjuna and the Pandavas and their side sound, it's transcendental conch shells, because they're all pure devotees in the Lord. So therefore, Bhishma was inspired, though everybody else in the army was afraid. Here was the eternal Lord of all the worlds preparing to protect his devotee servants by personally coming into battle with them. So Bhishma is then thinking, you know, the Lord's come to protect his devotees, and how wonderful this is. Right? Bhishma grazed across at Arjuna's chariot. There was a cruel destiny that he had brought him into opposition with Krishna and the Pandavas. Surely duty was all-powerful. Chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita. The first maneuvers of the battle begin. Arjuna took up the Gandiva and said to Krishna, O infallible one, please might draw my chariot between the two armies so I may see the enemy and how they are positioned. Go forward, O Lord, so I may say who is desirous of fighting with us today. Let us see those fools who wish to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. Krishna drove the horses forward and the fine chariots moved under the center of the field. Krishna smiled. Just behold all the Kurus assembled here. Arjuna looked across the field. Krishna could understand Arjuna's mind. The long-awaited time for war had arrived, a terrible fratricidal war. There was now no turning back. Suddenly, seeing the horror of it before him, Arjuna gazed at his relatives and friends, men who were like fathers, brothers, sons, and grandsons, as well as teachers, uncles, friends, in-laws, and well-wishers. Arjuna was overwhelmed with compassion. How could he possibly have look forward to killing his own kinsmen and friends, right? Because neither side is really thinking about this. Duryodhana still won't think about it, but as devotees, then Arjuna is going to think about this. He felt weak and addressed Krishna in a trembling voice. My dear Lord, seeing my friends and relatives before me in a fighting spirit, I feel my limbs quivering and my mouth drying up. Arjuna's bow slipped from his hand and his body shook. His skin was burning and he felt his hair standing on end. O Keshava, I do not think I can carry on in this fight. I am forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. It seems to me that only evil and misfortune will result from this battle. How can any good come from killing one's own relatives? What value is victory if all our friends and loved ones are killed? Right? So Arjuna is taking the side of the conditioned soul, so that in these difficult situations, how they'll be overwhelmed with the identity, the compassion, and everything of the world, which are pious things. They're good things that are in the mode of goodness. But what he's not thinking is how, as the soul, how we're transcendental to all this. And so, therefore, it's a matter of performance of your duties in light of your God consciousness. So this is, he hasn't come up. So now we'll see in this discussion that will come up now in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will explain all the transcendental science to Arjuna, and then he'll be have that proper consciousness to be able to fight. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.